Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the September 13 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Bill Gentry of Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing from Morton, Illinois, and Tommy Grisafi of Advanced Trading. He's out of DeMott, Indiana. Let's begin, as usual, with a list of topics we should cover. I'll start with you, Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities.
Well, I think the consideration right now after the USDA supply-demand report is, do we have to go ahead and stimulate more demand? New contract lows in corn today. How much lower do we really need to press? I think the funds have started to work the short side a little bit more aggressively, and the wheat market's kind of breaking down too. So those two in tandem kind of cause us a little bit of grief, and it might leave the market searching for new lows before it's all said and done, especially since we're only at the leading edge of harvest.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, your thoughts?
Yeah, what do we do now? Basis. You know, obviously the China talks that hopefully happen. The biggest is what now that we got this, and is it realistic?
And Tommy Grisafi, what do you have on your list?
I'm really focused on working with the guys up in the Northern Plains, and you know, as you and I were just up at the Big Iron Farm Show, space is so valuable this year, and understanding how to use space and how to use basis contracts or any contract to move a product. And I think I'm actually starting to see panic out in the countryside, and it's concerning. So as we talked about yesterday during the show, that there's no one's ever made a great decision panicking. So what can we do to calm the farmer down?
Well, let's start there, because you say yesterday during the show, and you mean on the Big Iron Farm show site, where you and I both were and have been talking to farmers in North Dakota and from Minnesota and South Dakota, and they really are concerned about what to do with this crop. When they call the grain elevators, many of them, and the further west you go, the more likely this is in North Dakota, are saying, hey, look, we're already all full up. You can bring the soybean bushels you told us you would have here, but everything else has to stay home. So they have to figure out some storage options. What do you think they'll do, and what should they do?
I think they'll beg, borrow, and steal to borrow some more money from the bank. I just got off the phone with a farmer who's going to pile a little corn. I think more wheat will make it to town and has already made it to town. So we had that rally in wheat during the right in the gut slot of harvest up there in spring wheat. And so a lot of wheat was priced and brought into town, which gobbled up even more of that room where people thought they were going to bring beans. So beans are the lone man out, and beans are usually people's what I call money honey, where they bring the beans into town, the cash flow, and then they store the corn and the wheat up there and wait for basis appreciation. So they're going to have to get creative. In the end, some bushels may be sold at a horrible price. A lack of planning, and in general, a lot of people don't have a marketing strategy. They've been blessed with good bushels, and we do tend to hit seasonal lows, and then we start to rally out of it almost every year in beans. So we get down in lower nines of futures, and then we get back to the higher nines, and people move a lot of product. They're not going to have that ability this year. And what Chip was alluding to maybe is that what if we don't get this China thing worked out? So I think 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, farmers were talking, well, when we get this China thing worked out, and now it's, it could be a while till we get this China thing worked out. And I just noticed there's a lot of sad faces in the crowd yesterday. And as I had said, you know, you're going to see who's been swimming without their shorts, because the tide's going out, and it's going out in a big way. There's definitely no experts in Trump tariff trade wars. So anyone who tells you they know what they're doing is kind of fibbing to you. So we're going to see who knows how to manage space and what money people have to, you know, hold their grain.
Hey, Bill Gentry, he mentioned wheat and it coming to town. When we're talking to producers up here, they really do look to Chicago as the primary place to set the price of wheat. You suggested that market's breaking down. A whole lot of wheat in storage, hard red, soft red, spring wheat, the market really beginning to break down. And is that on just a domestic or a global level? And how concerning should that be for the rest of the marketplace?
You know, I don't think in the wheat market in particular is really that depressed. We haven't made new contract lows there. What I was actually hoping and thinking about in the shadows, we've got a couple of stories. One was the idea that Russia was going to stop exporting some wheat, and then they came back in and said, no, we're going to do fine. And then another guy says they're going to stop exporting. So I think that that bubble's been burst a little bit. Also on Monday, we got revised numbers from the Australian wheat crop down about 13% from the previous assessment. I think those two features were probably too early for the USDA to really engage in this report, and I think that could be looming in the shadows for subsequent reports. So I'm crossing my fingers that the funds don't want to go short the wheat right now. I think the fundamentals are a little bit more positive, but the timing is going to be the issue. And I think realistically, waiting and seeing that come around, I do think that there's probably going to be some wheat acres that go out a little bit more, so that's a little bit depressing. But in the grand scheme of things, the charts really look halfway decent in wheat and a little bit challenged in corn. But I think optimistically, if the funds can continue to maintain their length or their long position and maybe start to build into it, maybe better things will be down the road.
Would you agree with that assessment, Chip Nellinger?
I do. I think that there's a fundamental story there. For sure. You know, obviously the Black Sea area, Australia, Europe. I think that was the one disappointing thing out of this report was we actually saw an increase in the Russian crop. And I think that really shocked the market. They thought that the USDA would continue to go lower and might have several more revisions lower. But so the increase in the Russian crop, I think maybe was the final straw for some longs. I am worried now with the close that we had on the report day, and of course, corn breaking down, that maybe the funds are going to go through a liquidation mode here and maybe drive this thing ultimately lower than what we would think right now. But longer term, I agree. It just may take a while to kind of see that fundamental story develop. And, you know, again, I think Russia doesn't have a never ending supply. It might be a few months before the market gets more comfortable that they're out of the market for good. So I do, and I think that'll help corn bottom. But in the short run, I can't find much in this report to hang my hat on that for a reason to rally, other than some sort of a news story some morning that's a shock on a trade agreement or something like that.
I know it was a turn of phrase, but you make me laugh because it was the one disappointing thing out of this report that you found.
Well, I mean, on the wheat side, I meant wheat specific, the disappointment in wheat. There was a lot of stuff to be disappointed in corn and beans. I'm talking wheat specific.
Speaking of which, that 2.9 bushel to the acre increase, Chip, in corn, nearly 3 bushels up. That was just a big surprise for the marketplace. Were you anywhere in the realm of thinking that we could increase the size of the U.S. corn crop?
I was in the realm of thinking that we could increase it, but certainly not by that much. I think that is a mind-boggling number. And if you look at some of the state-by-state breakdowns where they increased, the state-by-state, Illinois in particular, and I'm not discounting. I know we have harvest started, and there's plenty of yield reports pouring in, and they're good. But to be 13 bushels better than a year ago in the state of Illinois, I'm not super good with statistics or math. I'm just kind of a simple guy from the farm. But if we're going to be 13 bushels better on average, to me, that says that some fields better be 20, 25 plus bushels better. And I'm not hearing that yet. And I know it's still early on. So I think there's still some questions there. But no, that was just a mind-boggling large increase. And we'll see if they hold to that or add to it. That's going to be the talk. Big crops get bigger, right? So the market's probably going to expect October's numbers to go up. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see if they can continue that pace. But I don't know. Some of those state by state numbers were pretty shocking.
Yeah, Tommy, 214 bushels to the acre in Illinois nationwide, 181.3. That's just a big jump up from the 178.4, and certainly way, way above the trend line yield for corn across the United States. How much of a problem does it create for corn? And I ask that knowing full well that the ending stocks for corn look better than anything else we have at the moment.
Well, yeah, in the long term, if you want to be optimistic, corn has a story, but it's going to need a problem to make that story happen. So, yes, we have a lot less corn than we did last year. And I guess we have to tip our hats to the genetic companies and the farmers that we work with and represent who are just great at farming. And it seems to me farmers have done a wonderful job of adapting the technology, but this marketing thing, you know, the one way they get paid for doing all this hard work for all these months and years to grow a crop, it's, they love to get mystified. I remember there was a show, a guy on Market to Market the other day talking about $8 corn. Well, let's get back to $4 first before we get to $8. And when they hear stuff like that, they really bite off hard on it, in my opinion. And they, you think they wouldn't believe it, but I really do think it makes people hesitate from making sales. And so now, as Chip said in the beginning of the show, we have to reset everything, start from today's levels and yesterday's levels and say, okay, what do we do now? How do we take advantage of these carries? How do we do this? I feel the farmer almost feels like people who thought Hillary was going to win, and then when she lost and Trump won, they're like, well, this can't be. And it is, and it's Groundhog Day, and here we are, it's harvest, and the basis is widening out all across America in many spots because space is so valuable. And so I never doubt that we can grow these big crops, but I'm always shocked. I guess it sounds strange, but I guess I'm a cheerleader for higher prices, and the best way to get higher prices is to have reduced yields. And we did see that in Europe in the wheat crop. So the farmer is going to have to cash flow regardless of price when they say, I want to sell at break-evens or profits. If they've missed that opportunity and they're going to store their beans, there may be a lot more corn coming to town than we realize here the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, Bill Gentry, I want to start with soybeans and begin to talk about marketing for soybeans and corn with all three of you directly. But with soybeans, from today, those unpriced bushels and even the price bushels, producers are going to have to think a whole lot about how to get the job done, where storage can be had, depending on where they are in the United States. And they need to take into account the market facilitations payment, which is at 82.5 cents. On Thursday, USDA clarified that it really is 82.5 cents. And as I read it, it's on production. So on 2018-19 production, doesn't matter whether you've got a sale made or not yet, even if that sale is in the $10 area. So if you've got 10 bucks, you have $10, 82.5. Think of it that way, I guess. And you have to add it all up and then start to say bushels times what my price average is, including that market facilitations payment, helps things out some. And then in December, things could change just a little bit again. That's the next time they will announce the second part of this. And if it's that early, I suppose there may be more payment yet to come. But let's work with the 82.5. What do farmers do on all those bushels they have priced and unpriced at this point?
I think realistically from these value levels, assuming we can rule out the idea of going to 770, which I haven't done yet, but I think, you know, I'm trying to regain my composure after yesterday. Realistically, you could probably come back in and re-own, you know, sell the crop and re-own it on paper and work it that way. I think the volatility in the marketplace is relatively low. I think all things considered, the charts look like they could be basing. I don't have any confidence at the leading edge of harvest, but cross my fingers and hope for the best. I think that using some of that money for some re-ownership is a strong consideration.
How about you, Chip Nellinger? What do you have in way of ideas?
Well, that's a tough one because it is such a case-by-case scenario. You mentioned earlier the far northwest Corn Belt where sometimes cash bids are even hard to come by. The basis is horrible there. It's not good anywhere. So I think it's case by case, but again, it's managing that storage the best you can, finding the best deal around. And there are differences in localized basis at different elevators and co-ops. They're handling this year differently. There's vast differences in storage and DP charges, so it's going to really pay to do some homework, spend some extra time, call places that maybe you normally wouldn't sell grain to, because they might have a much better deal than the place down the road, their competitor. So I think that's a start. Managing cash flow, I think Tom said earlier, you know, in many cases, producers are blessed with really strong yields this year, particularly on beans. Recalculate what your break even is, because now it's a sticker shock of low prices, but we're sitting there and we have 70, 75 bushel beans and 260, 80 bushel corn like some producers have. That really changes your cash flow and your break even. So recalculate that and kind of get your mind back to square one with where we're at right now would be my probably two top ideas, but it's a tough environment without question.
Tommy Grisafi, your ideas on marketing soybeans?
Depending on where you are in the country and what you have forward sold and forward protected, you got to get this basis under control. If some people are taking their November hedges and rolling them to Jan, the elevators have been up north have been very accommodating to do that because they don't physically want the beans right here at harvest. And this is where your networking and people skills are going to add to Chip's point. On this world where everyone's just texting everyone, or they've lost some networking people skills. And this is where you do need to, what Chip said, and you need to get a piece of paper and write down what all your choices are. And you need to call, and everyone's, not everyone, some people are more prepared for this than others. But this is kind of like that storm hitting the East Coast, and it's going to rock some people's worlds. And some people may not come back from this. There is a chance, and no one likes to talk about it, that we are having our Jimmy Carter moment, and we're ruining demand in soybeans. But for marketing them, they're going to have to go somewhere, either in your bin, at an elevator. The cost of doing business, or just to assume that you can just casually bring beans to an elevator and store them there, I think you're going to be shocked when you see what you're getting. There's, in some parts of Dakotas, beans are starting to get in the middle sixes. So definitely some sticker shock for folks. So, and get on the horn with your banker. Let them know your situation, and don't wait till December or January to be walking in there and telling them that you didn't cash flow as you'd like. And then I'm sure that we all have customers who are just, this isn't going to be that big of a deal for them. They were forward sold, forward protected. They're proactive. They have bins. They have baggers. I mean, they can manage this this downturn, both in price and basis. But to Chip's point, we are in the bushel business. And if it is the job of the American farmer to go grow as many bushels as they can, and you're in a much better situation if you grew the bushels with that price structure, and then you add on your payment from the government, maybe the numbers aren't quite as bad as you think if you'd calm down and just run through all the scenarios.
So I was taking a look at the cash basis bids map that Philip Shaw, who's at Agridome on Twitter and writes for DTN, he's from Canada, had posted last night. And I was trying to visualize what was happening really with this marketplace. Clearly, there is a line on the geography at the Illinois River, which makes perfect sense, I think, where on one side of the river it might be 60 or 70 other under, and then on the other side, the west side, you jump 20 cents, and then you just keep going up from 90 to $1 to $1.30, $1.50, $1.75, maybe as much as $1.90 all the way out in the far western parts of the North Dakota. And it's that's because the PNW is, roughly speaking, close to China. And so all those bushels that normally go out the export market have to find a home. They will be coming maybe into St. Louis, and that's why the Illinois River, I think, is kind of the demarking line. But I'm wondering, the folks that are in Iowa may not have expected to see their bases roll as far under as it has, and they're really impacted at this point. And for all of those people who are looking at really, and at 60 under in Illinois and Indiana, Ohio, I suppose that really hurts. But when you're at 90 and a dollar and a dollar 10 or 20 under, it's a whole lot more hurt. I'm wondering maybe what they ought to do about storage on the farm. They could build storage for the soybeans. They could pile corn. But if they're just faced with which crop do I put in the bin now, is there a recommendation at this point whether you want to put corn in the bin or you want to put soybeans in the bin? To this point in time, most of the analysts, Chip, have told me to put soybeans in the bin. What do you think?
Yeah, in a lot of areas of the Corn Belt, it does make more sense because of the combination of the carry in the market and the absolutely horrendous nearby basis to store those beans. Now, that's a double-edged sword, and I know we've talked about this a lot on this show in the past. If you store it and you don't price the carry, if you don't sell the carry, and 3 months, 4 months, 5 months down the road, the deferred contract just drops to where we're at today, you did yourself a disservice. So you have to kind of take that into consideration and lock the carry in if you're going to do that. But in a lot of areas, it does make more sense, which is not typical. Usually corn's the one that pays to store, like, because of the basis and the massive carry in the bean market that we haven't seen in a long, long time. It does make more sense. Now, you hit the nail on the head. In some areas of the Eastern Corn Belt, Indiana, Eastern Illinois, that processor market is still way, way better. And that's not the case to where it maybe still makes sense to move the beans and store corn. So you have to analyze that depending on where you're at in the Corn Belt. The other thing I'd comment on too, kind of like what Tommy had said earlier, and there's areas, this is a strange historic year. We've never really seen this. I've heard of producers that into like a rail terminal, a container shipper, it has penciled to haul beans, you know, 80, 90, 100 miles. So look outside of your normal geographic area, the way you deliver, because there might be some deals out there that normally you'd say, I'm not hauling beans 90 miles. Well, it might pay to do it. So it's a strange year, and we've never faced it before.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that, and the best way to go do that is online, I suppose. And you can look up those basis bids on many, many websites, so it's worthwhile taking a look. Tommy Grisafi, anything that we haven't covered you think we should for the day?
Sometimes when markets go down, people say, well, that bad news is out of the way. Thank God, you know, when they start talking about when we're going to bounce. Well, who's to say we're done going down? So as sad as it is to say, there's still downside in the market. And as fun as it is to be bullish, and it's not fun to ask someone to protect low prices, we can get lower. And so I think when it's all said and done, we're going to see that several people in the industry made a lot of mistakes. A lot of farmers made a lot of mistakes, and that we had a comfort zone of what we think our range is in beans. And I can kind of see it in my head. It's that 875 to 1025 no bean future, and that 340 to 390 D's corn future. And then that's our range. But if we start breaking out of those range, and the other gentleman said that I heard the number 770, that could happen pretty quickly here. A couple bad days, we could be right down there. Do I want it to happen? No. Do I want to even think about it? No. But our risk is still to the downside, because managing the risk once we start going up is not that hard to do. If someone does need to make a sale and wants to own a future, an option, that's so easy to do. But it's hard to, when you're in a tailspin, to, you know, stop it. And so I think there's a lot of bad habits that have been, a lot of bad habits people have acquired over the years, whether it be, oh, back when I first met Chip, you know, when corn guys were selling corn with a 7 and an 8 in front of it. So once you do that, you don't think it can have a 2 in front of it again, but it can. And, you know, it's a challenging time. But whenever things look bad, they usually don't stay there forever. Whenever times are good, like they were maybe just 4 or 5 weeks ago in the markets, and especially in wheat and corn, they don't stay there very long. So price rallies are opportunities to get forward sold in the carries and protect, and We don't protect because we think the market's going to go down. We protect because you go broke when it does go down. So I guess I'd tell anyone listening, you know, we're thinking about you and we want to help you work this out, but you got to get the pencil and paper. And the best thing you could have done was 6 months ago is do something. And now we're today. The other thing too is don't lose sight of next year's crop. So if you don't have your 18 corn in control, 19 corn is starting to go down a nickel every day too. We're not going to have federal crop insurance price levels until next February. So thinking DEIS-19 corn is just going to have a 4 in front of it could very much not be the case. And so I'm very worried about corn for 19, as these acres could absolutely explode in the corn acres. And I think, Todd, you got a good taste of that up in Fargo yesterday.
Yeah, I tried to figure out what they were going to do, and I don't know that they know just yet. Corn or wheat, probably, and I suppose maybe we'll get a better handle by the time we get to January, but it still poses the problem, Tommy, as to what the low-end corn might be for this year and next. And this is a question that Bill Gentry wanted to ask, and I'll work back to him. But maybe, Tommy, you have an idea what some targets on the downside are for corn at this point, and how realistic are the downside objectives?
Well, the futures market doesn't scare me as much as the basis. And so if we truly fill up and these bushels are as big as the USDA says, and we're running out of room and elevators are starting to get a little concerned with their own situation, the Board of Trade could stop going down here and 10 cents, 20 cents, but the cash market could widen. And usually when the markets, we make a low, you start to see the basis improve. And then the futures follow. In this year, I'm very worried that the basis could stay weak for quite a long time. So futures market going down, you got to consider both of them, because in the end, you get your local cash market. No one, just many times as I've been to the Board of Trade, I've never seen anyone deliver a bushel down there. So I'm not concerned. Same thing with beans. To Bill's point of like a 770 bean, if basis is $2 under, what's it matter where the futures are now? So it's getting this cash situation under control. If you want to be optimistic, look out into the carries, and you could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and hopefully that's not a train coming down the track. So I hate to put a price on flat price, because I'm more concerned the combination of flat price and basis of how nasty it is.
Chip Nellinger, you want to take a shot at it?
Yeah, I think the long-term low, there's going to be plenty of support underneath of this market. I think the key is year over year, even with a record crop, by far a record crop, we're cutting the carryout still because of that record demand. So in my mind, I think a low in corn could really kind of come in the 332 to 337 range. Beans, I'm a little worried about. If you look at a weekly chart, you could really see a much longer-term low down there in the 740 to 760, 765 area.
You know, I'm cautiously optimistic we could find it pretty soon. And I was just looking at some reference points. Some of the things we talked about last month was the stocks-to-use ratio. And we also talked about last month having a demand base domestically of almost $15 billion. Well, now we got $15 billion. So I think the market might have to go searching. I really think the discussion about the basis is most important. The question I always, and we've talked about the commitment to traders report and the funds, that's the driving force for the futures market right now. If they decide to pile on the shorts, then we could go appreciably lower. I'd say, you know, I'd probably start looking at 10 cent increments on new lows, kind of like in the olden days where you just kind of dialed it down, look and see what it looks like, feels like, and do it again if it's not done yet. So I'd like to think that, you know, 10 cent steps to the downside is probably my mindset. Whether it happens that way or not, it's in the funds camp. But I do think that stocks use ratio did not change much month over month. And globally, it barely hit the needle. So the demand base is good enough that we can probably consume what we need to. The question is, we talked about this whole half hour, is how do we put the logistics together and the storage together to measure out this crop in a more, I guess, in a more precise manner. We don't need gluts in certain areas just to pound on the cash market.
Let's get a final word from each of you. And I think, Bill, I'll stay with you. Do you have anything else to add before we let you go for the afternoon?
No, I think we pretty much covered it. I do think that stocks-to-use ratio is an important piece rather than looking at the carryout number, and we'll continue to monitor that going forward.
Now, of course, Bill Gentry is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Tommy Grisafi is with Advanced Trading. He's in DeMott, Indiana. Your final word for the day, Tommy?
We'll get through this. I remember the day of 9/11 and the day after, I really thought the sun wouldn't come up in the morning, but it does. And with the bushels and some help from the government and a little discipline, the American farmer's going to be here for the next 20 years and 50 years. And farming's not going away. It's just going through a challenging time.
And Chip Nellinger, your final thought for the day.
Well, I, again, kind of mirroring what Tommy said, it's time to sharpen the pencil. We know what it is at this point with yields and price. I think the unknown here is these China talks coming up. And that could change the name of the game a little bit as well. And we don't know if or when. We hope it's when we'll get this trade agreement figured out. But it looks like there's going to be some talks coming up here in the near future. And if the market does get a hint that there are better relations or that there's going to be a solution there, the bean market still could rally a dollar even in spite of, I really believe this, sounds crazy, rally a dollar in the course of 3 or 4 days, just evening up the discrepancy we have versus Brazilian beans. Obviously, that'd spill over and help corn. We've got to be ready for that. If you don't have a plan, then those opportunities are going to come and they're going to go quickly, and you're going to be right back having not done anything. So have a plan. Don't stick your head in the sand because it is a depressing environment, but be proactive, have that plan, and be ready to act when the opportunities are here.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can hear the whole of our program online anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Tommy Grisafi of Advanced Trading in DeMott, Indiana, and Bill Gentry from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.